Thank you so much. So I'm really excited to be here. I feel like God has brought me full circle. I started at Calvary Chapel in 19 Lisa and Brian weren't the pastors yet. We had another set of pastors. And then the Lord raised up Lisa and Brian, so we were right there when they were being raised up, and she was my friend. Gave me to her, because I don't know, I told somebody last night, I'll tell you guys, because she said, Brian's the pastor now, I'm not the pastor's wife, and nobody calls me. And I thought everybody would call me when I was a pastor's wife. And so the Lord said, you're going to call her and you're going to be her friend. So, and I have been blessed and blessed and blessed throughout the years. And Brian, when we first started, Brian was a landscaper. And Lisa tells me he's now a landscaper at him too. So he's going full circle. But I want to speak to you today about God's amazing faithfulness. When Lisa asked me, we've been talking, we came to the pastor's conference, the senior pastor's wife conference. We talk, you know, there and stuff to get to fellowship, and every year she says, let's do something. And every year I say, okay, and every year we go on and on. We're busy in our churches, and last year she said, okay, we got to do it this year. It's going to be 25 years of that. Thank you, Lord. 25 years. I'm there. So I'm really excited that she invited me. Today, as I'm speaking to you, what I'm going to share is my testimony, and I don't really do that very often. I have, like, way long testimony. We would be here for weeks if I had to share it all with you. But I'm going to share what God has been doing in my life for the last 2.5 years and how he has changed me amazingly and how he did that. And so we're going to talk a little bit about fiery trials. And Peter tells us in 4:12, beloved, think it not strange concerning fiery trials, which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you. But rejoice in so much as you are partakers of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory shall be revealed, you may be glad also with exceeding joy. And in the New American Standard Bible says that cometh upon you to prove you. And so let's talk a little bit about trials. You know, everybody has trials. I heard her last night talking about, Stacey talking about, you know, her electricity and the trials and, you know, some days I think my trial is the day after Thanksgiving when I do that Black Friday shopping and I can't find the present. That's a trial, you know. And then there's trials. There's fiery trials. Let's talk about those. Fiery trials are trials that, number one, fire, what? Burns. I cook. So I get burned. I'm like reaching it up and I'm every time. I have burns all the time because I love to cook. And then fiery trials, what happens in a fire? Fire consumes. And what is left? Ashes. And thank God we serve a God that says, I will make beauty from ashes. And so that is what's happened in my last 2 years. And I know that fire consumes because when I live in a really small rural community. And I was living in this house and up the road, this house on fire. I could see from my house that it was on fire. So it's like 20 acres away from here. You know, everything is, I live way out of space. And so I drove up the road and I'm like, oh no, the house is on fire. And it was like a single wide trailer, kind of an older trailer. And so nobody's home. And so I drove up there and I drove back down and I called because I didn't have a cell phone. And so I called the fire department and I went back up there and the whole thing was a pile of ashes. I mean, just so quickly, the fire had consumed it. So I know fire consumes, and I know that it leaves ashes. And so I want to talk to you about that and share my testimony of how God took me through a fire so great that it consumed me and it changed who I was from the inside out. And I'm a puddle, so if I cry, I'm sorry. God's light will shine on you and dry me up. I am a puddle. I tell my friends all the time, I'm just a puddle. So, how God's grace, his amazing faithfulness has changed me and shaped me into the image. And he took the ashes, and he's still working in our lives. So let's pray so that I can have a gift. Father, let this message touch the heart of your women here today. God, help me to reveal to them how much you love them, and that no matter what kind of trial that they go through, whether it be big, whether it be small, give them the confidence to know that you are faithful and that you will bring him through. Father, I don't care what he says. His fight is useless because we have a victor in you. You've already won that. Allow my testimony to touch their hearts and teach them that you have prepared them for such a time as this. And God, that you will never, ever forsake them. And I thank you in Jesus' name. And so the Lord has prepared me. It took 25 years to prepare me. Faith to faith. Little faiths. Little trials. That God prepared me for this monster trial that he was going to take us through. So let me give you a little bit of background. I've been a Christian since 1982. I got pregnant. This is for you single girls. Okay. I dated a boy in high school that was a Christian. Or so I thought he was a Christian because I wasn't a Christian. And so he was different. He was amazing. And he loved God. Amen. Hallelujah. He took me to Bible studies and even went as far as saying, you know, if you don't go to Bible study with me, you know, I can't date you. But at the same time, we're sleeping together. And, you know, after I became a Christian, I looked back and I thought, okay, what's wrong with this picture? You know, it was so great. But anyways, I ended up getting pregnant, and he gave me a choice, me or the baby. So I was like, okay, what about that Christian stuff? What all these years you've made me go to, you know, to church with you, and you told me all these things. And so I said, well, hands down, it's the baby, sorry. So I ended up, he broke up with me, and I ended up, you know, having this baby and stuff. And so if you're single, and you're looking, and you're in a relationship, and he's a Christian, and you are doing things unchristlike, he's not a Christian. Okay? He's not a Christian. He's not doing the things that God has called him to do. So be choosy, because God has a perfect plan for you. And God brought in my husband 6 months after my daughter was born, and he was the one that God had chosen for me. And he loved me, and he loved my daughter unconditionally. And so, in 1982, after he had left me, and I was just devastated, oh, what am I going to do? I'm pregnant. This guy was a Christian. And all those times he made me go to Bible study, all that thinking, everything came back to me. And so his best friend said, let me lead you to the Lord. And so I accepted the Lord, and I walked with the Lord after that, and it was a blessing. And 6 months later, like I said, I met my husband. And I'll tell you, when I first became a Christian, when I was in high school, I just thought it was cool. I don't know how many people here went to my high school or a few, because I lived in Colorado. And the Lord really had to show me that I was so uncool. You know, I had a lot of repenting to do. But anyways, I went into church and I was like, oh, do you see all these guys are geeks? What am I going to do? I can't get a husband from all these nerds. And so then my husband came to this Bible study. It wasn't my husband. He came to this Bible study. And he was at the time, he was like one of the most popular guys in my high school. I was like, wow, he's a Christian. I can't believe this. He's mine, Lord. I got dibs. He's the only non-nerd in this whole church. So I look back and I really thank him for that. So let me tell you a little bit about the love of my life. His name is Frank Rodriguez. I'm old style girl. And Frank went to the same high school, and like I said, he was really, really cool. You know, all the girls loved him. All the guys wanted to be him. He's just a cool guy. And so I was really excited that he chose me. Well, actually, I chose him and reeled him in really tight. But we went to Calvary. Our first date was Calvary Costa Mesa conference. I mean, a concert. Yeah, out there, they used to have them in the amphitheater back then. And so we went there, and night, he kissed me goodnight, and I thought, okay, Lord, that's it. This is the love of my life. This is him. This is my soul. And one kiss! And I thought, okay, I can't, this is who I can't live, you know, without. So when you're choosing your mate, it's not who you can live with, it's who you cannot live without. And I knew I could not live without my husband. Or my friend at that time. Anyways, in 1985, we were married, and he is still the center of my life, and I love him so much. We attended Calvary from 85 to probably about 93, and we walked in the ministry. We worked with Brian and Lisa, and we had an up and down relationship. My husband at that time, God had called him at an early time to pastor, and he was like freaked. Every single time God would tell him, hey, you know what, you're getting strong, he would go back into the world. And he just would run, and our life was like roller coaster city. You know, 9 months of serving God, 3 months of just blech. And so, anyways, in 1993, I decided to do something drastic and move. Pick up my stuff, pick up my kids, and move. And we have 5 kids. At that time, we had 3 kids. My daughter, that was I was telling you about, and I have 4 sons. And so, anyways, we picked our kids up, and we moved to Mexico. And during that time, my husband was in a car accident. And God told him, look, you either going to serve me or you're out. Because you are ruining the ministry. You, the people that look at you and see you from the outside, you're destroying your testimony. You're destroying my word. Because one day you're a Christian, the next day you're partying, the next day you're a Christian. And so after that, he decided, you know what, I just need to stop. I just need to do what God tells me to do. And so I was pregnant. I found out I was pregnant when we moved to New Mexico, which was really unexpected. And so my son Seth was born, and we named him Seth because all of our eyes turned towards God, and God changed our lives from that point on. And so we God prospered us there. We were in a Calvary there, and God prospered us. We were able to buy our first home out there, and then God continued to prosper us. We bought our second home, and you know, life was great for us. And God said, okay, it's time to start a little Bible study. So we started a Bible study in our home. And people were coming and coming and coming. And about 2007, the Lord told my husband, okay, it's time for full-time ministry. And my husband and I, because we were like, we had 5 kids, and my kids were in high school. And, you know, it was so expensive. And our little church that we had that had grown, you know, they didn't pay us a salary. And we're like, gosh, you know, we really make good money. We both, I worked full-time and had a great job. Frank worked full-time and he had a great job. And so we prayed and it's like, oh, Lord, that's what really means we need to go into ministry full-time. It just means that we need to, you know, balance better. But you know what? And we were worried, well, how are we going to pay our bills? How are we going to do this? How are we going to do that? And you know, God, he doesn't care about those things. He's so faithful to us that, you know, at this point in my life, I can quit my job and know that God's going to take care of me, whether it's just whatever it is it is. So we had tons of excuses. And but the truth is, we both loved our jobs. And being in full-time ministry meant we had to cut back everything in our lives because we were going to have the kind of money that we had. And so, surely God's not asking that of us when it took us so long to get to this place. And but I look back now and I wish, Lord, I wish we would have been obedient, because that was the beginning of our trial. On July 16th, 2008, this is a regular day, went to work, my husband went to work, and my husband is really good about calling me and saying, hey, you need anything on the way home? And he called me up, he said, okay, I'm coming in for the day. He worked construction, he worked at White Sands Air Force Base, he was building a tower, all these, you know, governmental, whatever, things. And I told him, no, everything's great. I'm home, we're going to have dinner, you know, I'll see you in a bit. Okay. Went home, got in the house, and I got this phone call. And they said, this gentleman that called me said, are you Sherry Rodriguez? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, I'm Frank's boss, and there's been a little accident at work. And I said, oh. And he said, oh, no, your husband's talking. He's alert. And I said, okay. And he said, but we're going to medevacuum to Albuquerque, which is about an hour and a half away. And I'm like, medevacuum? You can't walk? What's wrong? Oh, no, we're just, it's a precaution. Just, you know, get to the hospital. So I thought, Lord, what is going on? You know, here we have this perfect life going on, and now what's going on? So I got in the car. My mom lives right next door to me, so she gets in the car with me, and I'm driving, and I just am in the car. What is going on? And all I could think of was, God, I don't know what's going on, but don't let me be like Job's wife, please. I don't know what you're doing. Don't let me be like Job's wife and curse you. Don't let this rock my world so much that I'm done. So I get to the hospital, and I run into the hospital, and Mexico has never been trauma center. And so I was blessed that, you know, the trauma center was there. My husband was none of that. It's really weird. My boys were at a soccer camp. And my sons looked up in the helicopters, yellow, the big yellow helicopters. And my one son said, afterwards, he said, Mom, we looked up and I looked at that yellow helicopter and I said, wow, look at that yellow helicopter. And somebody said, yeah, somebody's being medevaced into the trauma center. That's how they do it. Little did they know that the that was missing. Had, you know, their dad that was being in there. So it was weird because they wouldn't have been alert to that at all. And God showed them things. So I got to the hospital. I ran through the door. I went to the registration. And I said, you know, I'm here. My husband's being medevac. And they said, oh, we have a special room for you. So I thought, this can't be good. This special room. And so they take me back there. And I go in this room. And some of the people that had heard that my husband had gotten hurt, were already in this room before I got there. They were in Albuquerque, and they were, like, in this room. And so God had prayer group in this room. And so I went in, and I looked at my husband. He was lying on his bed, and they were, you know, talking to him and stuff, and he was alert. And I thought, he doesn't look like he's hurt. You know, he looks good. You know, I could see he was in pain. And, you know, they're like, move your foot, move your hands, move your legs. And he did all that stuff. And they said, well, sign these papers. We need to take him in to x-rays. And so they took him in, and they came back out, and they came in the room, and they said, well, we checked your husband, and we took his x-rays, and he broke his neck. And I went, oh, he broke his neck. So what do we do? And he said, well, he has to have surgery immediately. So they took him into surgery, and it was 6 hours, and I sat there, and the people from Calvary came, and all different Calvary's came because my husband is a Catholic pastor, and so they're praying, and a lot of them are like, are you ready to give him to the Lord? Are you ready to give him up? And the nurse would come out, and she goes, I'm sorry, you know your husband's going to die tonight. And I'm like, okay. You know, I'm like, Lord, please, let me be my Job's wife, please. That was my prayer the whole time. And anyways, I went in there, and I sat, and I waited, and waited. 6 hours later, I came out of surgery, and they had told me that he had made it through, but that the next few hours were going to be really drastic, because he had a C5, C7 injury, and that means he broke his neck way up here, and so it's on a ventilator, and, you know, and I'm like, oh, no, Lord, and so they put him on all these machines. He had tubes and IVs everywhere. Got him through the night. Next day I woke up and he had this 105 temperature, and they're like, what is going on? So again, we're like, praying, Lord, you know, what's going on? And praying. They said he blew two fuses in the front of his neck. Now we have to take him back into surgery. So he had to go through another 6 hour surgery. So he has fuses in the back of his neck, fuses in the front of his neck. But the bad news was is that he smashed his spinal cord. So they came to me and said, I'm sorry, but your husband can no longer move. And he is now paraplegic. And I'm like, or quadriplegic, which is even worse because it's, you know, all four extremities. Frank could not move his body from here down. Nothing. Didn't move his hands. Couldn't talk because he had a ventilator in. It had damaged his neck, and he had no functions at all. Had functions of his arms. He couldn't move his fingers. He couldn't move his legs. Couldn't move his hands. Nothing. And so that night I gave my husband to the Lord. I said, okay, Lord, if you want him, you want him. But the thing is that when I had talked to my husband, he said, I knew that God was going to save him. Because when what happened to him is he was coming in for the day, and his boss said, get on this crane. So there was this big crane machine. And the crane sits like this. And the box is right here. Well, that's what it looks like in a standing position. So he said, get on the crane, because my husband and his boss rode together. And so my husband got on the crane, and he got right here under his arm. And so he came up, and they came up for the day. Well, his boss pushed the wrong button. The box came down, and the crane smashed my husband. So he was smashed by a crane. You hear those weird stories? I'm the weird story. My husband is the weird story. But he told me that as he was being smashed, one eye blacked out. He said it was just like a piercing blackness. And as the other one started to shut, he cried out to the Lord. He said, I can't teach, Lord, if I can't see. What about this ministry? And he said, at that point, his eyes opened up, and my husband's head was never touched in the crane accident, ever. He broke his neck from here down, but his heart did not have one mark on it. So I know that an angel was being smashed instead of my husband's head, because he really should have died that day. There's not very many people that live through crane accidents. And so because it was running at high temperature, they had to put a central line of freezing water on them. And as I look back now, I think that really had made a difference. It made a difference down the road. So he has a central line, and this air conditioning box full of ice, and it would shoot through his body. Every time his fever would spike, his temperature would spike, and his body would shake like this, and it was just so horrible. Horrible. And I prayed, and God didn't answer me. And every day I would pray. And so a couple of years prior to this, I was at the Senior Pastors Conference, and God told me, I want you to read your word every single day. You read your word, but you do it hit and miss. And I need you to read your word every day. Be committed to that, you and your husband both. And so 3 years prior to this, I had been reading my word. I have this 1 year Bible. I tell people about it all the time. I love it because I don't have to think about the day. I open it to February 18th, and that's what I read. And God has used this 1 year Bible to cover me with his word every single time something has happened to my husband. And so we were praying, and I would read the word to Frank, and he was just so incoherent. And so finally, about the 8th day, they took out the ventilator. And they said, I'm sorry, he is what he is. He's going to be a quadriplegic. He won't be able to move. His spinal cord is smashed, and, you know, we're going to send you guys off to a rehab center and teach you how to live with your disability. Rehab centers are, I thought they were, you know, well, they're going to make it better, it's going to block. No, they teach you how to live with where you're at. And so, day 11 in the hospital, I continued to read to Frank, and we continued to pray, and God finally answered us. And so this is what he answered us, and we knew it was from the Lord, because it's in 2 Chronicles, so, you know, it's not like one of those cool New Testament ones, 2 Chronicles. But in 2 Chronicles it says, for we have no power to face this vast enemy that is attacking us. We do not know what to do, but our eyes are upon you. And the Lord answered and said, do not be afraid or discouraged because of the vast army, for the battle is not yours, but the battle is God's. So take up your positions, stand firm, and see the deliverance of the Lord that he will give you. Don't be afraid. Don't be discouraged. Go out and face this tomorrow, and the Lord will be with you. And I was like, Lord, Frank was said, it's the Lord's battle. It's not our battle. And we were just so relieved that God had told us. You see, we serve in a community that is dark. Dark, witchcraft and Catholicism is so ingrained, and babies are having babies, and our city is just dark, and churches would come in, and before long they could go out, but they couldn't take it. And we had said, Lord, you know what? It's funny, when we were serving in Calvary Real Grande Valley, which is the church we came out of in New Mexico, years before that, my pastor's wife had said, when God called us to Berlin, I was just so excited because he didn't call us to Socorro, because Socorro is so dark and wicked. And so when my husband said, God has called us out, and I was like, well, where are we going? He's like, Socorro. I'm like, no, Marguerite said it's dark and wicked. Why do we have to go there? I'm like, are you sure? Call God and tell him, you know, that's not where we need to go. And so, but God sent us to Socorro, and it is a dark and wicked place. And you know what? But God promised that he's going to save those people. They are as desperate need of Jesus as Lilia was. And so we knew that God had us there. And so my husband, after we read the scripture, he said, it's not about us. It's about Socorro. It's about this ministry. And if we can save these people through what's going on with me, praise God. And I'm like, really? Okay. You know, and so my husband, I have to tell you how amazing he is, because he would, I mean, he was in the trauma center, and nurses would come in, and they would just have this countenance, and he'd tell me, what's wrong? And they would bear their burdens to my husband. My husband would be praying over them. You know, he can't move his arms, he can't move his legs, but he's praying over these people in this hospital room. And he continually told the doctors, you know what, my God's going to do this. I have this battle going on, but God is, you know, God that is going to deliver us. So we had a choice still about Romans 4:20, which says, he did not waver at the promises of God through unbelief, but was strengthened in faith by giving glory to God. And that was what we were going to do. We were going to give glory to God. No matter what it looked like, we knew that God had promised. And surely right here said that take up your positions and stand firm. That meant my husband was going to stand again. And so we took that promise, and we knew that God's faithfulness would be to us. I don't know how long it was going to be or what was going to happen, but I knew that God's faithfulness would get us through. And I believe that my prayer of saying, Lord, don't let me be like Job's wife, was answered by him. Because God has done so many amazing things in my, just to give me strength to get through things. Because if anybody knows anything about spinal cord injuries, your body is just not your body. And it is a horrible thing. So they kept my husband in the trauma center for 30 days. And for 30 days, he really ministered to other people. And they decided we were going to go to a rehab center. And we were really, I look back and I think God's faithfulness. It was a workman's comp claim. And so people have worked with workman's comp. My workman's comp lady was Christian. So I think she was the only Christian in New Mexico that worked for workman's comp. And so God had a plan. And she gave my husband everything. Oh, Pastor Frank needs that. Oh, Pastor Frank needs this. Oh, no. You know, and so, and my nurse case worker, she's new age. And so she's still with us, and we are always praying for her. And we tell her, Janice, wait till you see what God's going to do. Wait till you see what God's going to do. And she's like, yeah, yeah, you know. And so we had a choice. We could go to Craig Hospital, which is like foremost in spinal cord, private hospital. The food is very hot food. We were really blessed to choose that. Or we could go to Rancho Los Amigos, which is in Downey, California. You guys know that. Mm-hmm. County Hospital. But our family lived here. And so we were going to have to take this journey, and I was going to have to pack my kids up and go to a rehab center and leave my job and be with my husband, because that's where I needed to be. And God has blessed me with his job. That's incredible. I work for a university, and when I'm there, I work hard. But you know what, ladies? Every single time I have anything that has to do with the church, my husband, they're like, go, you're good. You know, and so God had covered me in my job, and so I had like 700 hours in the bank. So when I went to California, I had enough leave to stay there for the whole 4 months, and not one penny came out of me, you know, or less. God blessed it. So his faithfulness there again. And so we get to Rancho Los Amigos, and we get there on a Thursday. The doctor doesn't come in that day, and my husband is set in this triage place and put in bed. And so, if you have spinal cord injuries, you really easy to get blood clots. You have to move your extremities because blood clots set in really quick, and you know you can die from blood clots. And so, those 3 days that we were there in that triage waiting for that Monday to come, because you know, hospitals open, I guess they all start working on Monday again because the weekends they don't have to do anything. And so, he sat in this thing, and finally, by the third day, I told him, I'm getting him out of bed. I don't care what you guys say. I just had to take over the care of my husband, because his nurses were like, he'll be fine, he'll be fine. And my husband did, you know, he did get 2 blood clots in each leg in those 3 days. And so, but here again, this workman's comp Christian lady who's been praying for my husband called the hospital at Rancho Los Amigos, and she said, I want to tell you 3 things. First off, here's your priority. And I just spent $21,000 flying him into your hospital to get the best treatment, because Rancho Los Amigos is supposed to be one of the furthermost in spinal cord injuries. And so she said, so, if you don't do something with him immediately, I will fly him to Craig Hospital at your expense. And I will get him, and I will take him, and that will be it. So Frank became a priority of every doctor and every nurse on that floor. Because she just said, no. And they got me the special nurse caseworker for California that would say, he needs the best of this, he needs the best of that. And I really felt bad, because some of these people in there are, you know, they're on county and Medicaid, and here my husband is in a private room, and he's got a special bed, and he's got attendants, and, you know, God covered him, and covered him, and covered him, and it's so, and my work was gone, but God had already, in his faithfulness, prepared every single person that would touch my husband's life, every doctor, every nurse, and so we were really blessed in that area. So we stayed in Rancho Los Amigos for 4 months. My children had to come with me. The 4 boys were still at home. My daughter is in school here, so she was here. And so 4 months of my husband getting up at 7 a.m. and spending the day for 6 hours doing therapy. He had to learn how to, I remember the day I touched his hand, and he said, did you touch my hand? And I said, yes, I touched your hand, I touched your hand. And slowly, his hand started coming back. And they taught him how to read write because he couldn't write. So he wrote love letters. And he had, that's what he had to do. He had to write. He said, he's like, what do you want to write? So he said, write your wife love letters. So he learned how to read write. It was hard. It was hard. Every day, I would get up. I stayed in my hotel. I would get up, meet him at the hospital at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning, and I would be there till 9 o'clock at night. And my kids would be in the hospital with us, and they would run around this whole hospital. I mean, they were big boys. They were my kids at this point were all in high school. And so they would come in and say, Mom, these kids are so lost, because the people that would come in there that were gang members, and they would have gunshot wounds that severed their spinal cord. They would have ice pit, it's terrible, this ice pit that went into my neck, and now I can't walk. And so we really had a burden for these kids that were in there, and we would share the Lord with them, and we would give them a hope. And some of them would be like, I just can't wait to get out of here, because I'm going right back. I mean, in their wheelchairs, out on the streets. And we'd like, Lord, so we really had an opportunity. My boys had an opportunity to see, in our little town, there's gangs. It's like a game of Muppets, really. Then they went to Rancho Flosamigos and they seen what games were. I mean, they had to change their names to protect the innocent or to protect the guilty. And so we really had a burden. And my husband would speak to them about the Lord. I mean, here he is, he can't move, he can't, And as new people would come in, I would see the family members. I can distinctly remember the look on my face when I was told that Frank was going to be a quadriplegic. I was like, I just had this look, and every single family that came in there had that, what just happened to this look? And I just had a burden for them, and I would pray for them and stuff. And it's a tough one. Statistics say that 90% of men leave their wives when they have spinal cord injury. 85% of women leave their husbands. 87% of moms and dads, of boys and girls that have spinal cord injuries, put them in a home and leave them there because they can't deal with it. It is a really, really horrible thing that happens to the person's body. And so, my husband was my husband. I just loved him. It didn't matter. I was so thankful that he was alive. I was so thankful that he was alive because God could have taken him. Then what? I told him, God, okay, you can take him, but then you're going to take me too, because I'm going to die of a broken heart, and then my children aren't going to have a mother. Is that what you want for? You can't take him. But God promised us. He had a plan. And he was faithful to that plan. And so, every day he worked hard, and eventually, arms came back. Eventually, when he went in there, they do a thing called an Asia test. And they said, I'm sorry, he is a complete quad, 1% chance, and that's never going to happen, so you don't worry. And my husband looked at that doctor and told him, I'm sorry, I serve 100% God, not 1% God, and I'm going to walk. And he's like, oh, shit. Okay. They don't want to give you hope because spinal cord injuries, they're so iffy. I mean, they can tell you you'll never walk again, and God can heal you, and that's it. And so, every day, he would work hard, and I would be there. We'd work hard together. Our kids would be there. We had to learn how to get him in and out of a wheelchair. And I'll never forget this one day. They put him on the ground, and they said, okay, get up. And I'm like, how's he going to get up? And they're like, we want you to help him. I'm like, I'm not helping him. How am I going to get him up? What if I hurt him, And they're like, no, he needs to learn, because he's going to fall out of his chair. Chances are, he'll fall out of his chair. You need to learn how to get him up. I'm like, he's never falling out of his chair. He doesn't get to. That's not that. He can't. That's the rule of my house now. No falling out of chairs. And so, it was just horrible. And they would teach him all these things in his chair. And Frank was like, Lord, what are you doing? And in the meantime, my husband's chair with all these people. So 4 months go by, and we get to come home. Well, on the home front, God's faithfulness is so amazing. They came in, and they redid my whole house. The whole house was redone by the time we got home. New floors, new walls, new doors, new windows, new lifts. I live in this house, and it's up off the ground because we live in a flood zone. And so instead of having they said, oh no, your house is too high. So they actually, I have lifts in front and back of my house. And it's funny because prior to his accident, Frank and I, my husband was a construction guy, and I'm like, dude, are you ever going to do our house? Really? Are you ever going to change it? We need patios. We need sidewalks. Do you see the dirt that we live in? And you know, I was just, you know what? And when we got home, God had given us patios. He had given us walkways. He had given us lifts. He had given us, I mean, he had did all the things that I was complaining about. And I thought, pardon, what cost? And what cost was this? You know, and I'm thankful today because I got this really cool house. But, man, counting the cost was incredible. So, anyways, we got home and we were really unsure. And I had to go back to work. It was exactly like we got home on a Wednesday and I had to be back. My hours were going to run out that Monday. And so I had to be back. And so it was like, okay, Lord, what are we going to do? I mean, you're so fearful of the unknown because here we are. When we were in the rehab center, we were really sheltered by all the doctors and the nurses and how we could get dressed and how we could do this. And with spinal cord injuries, you have to be really careful because they can get bed sores. And there's all these things that, you know, you can go into the room because if they do it, they'll die right away. And I'm like, really, that's on me, you know. If he gets a bed sore, he could die. If he is laying on sheets that are crinkled, it can send him into a tailspin. I mean, just so many things. I mean, God just was so faithful in allowing me to learn how to do things for my husband. My husband had to intermittent cath himself, which means that he couldn't pee, he can't poop, he can't do anything myself. So I had to learn everything. And so that's why I was at the rehab center, because God had to teach me how to take care of him. And so, and plus my work, and my voice too. The boys had to learn how to deal with a dad that no longer could walk or move. And so the whole time my husband's heart was, what about this church? What am I going to do, you know? And God kept telling him, you're going to preach. You're going to get back up there and you're going to preach. Whether it be in a chair, walking, whatever, that's what I want you to do. There's no ending here. And so we came back and life went on. You know, Frank would go to rehab in Albuquerque. We live about an hour from Albuquerque. So 2 days a week, I would drive him to Albuquerque. Again, my work. I tell him, I'm sorry, but he's my priority. I have to take care of him. So I get up at 6 in the morning, get him ready for the day, go to work, come home at 12, pick him up, take him to rehab, pick him up at 4, you know, go back to work. And it was just crazy life. And my boys would help me, and it was a crazy life. And so the day he got his new wheelchair, because he was in this old, big, old, clunky wheelchair. And so the day he got his new wheelchair, we were all excited because it's like really fast. It's purple and it's got the Calvary Dove on it. It's just really cool. And so God provided a van for us while we were still at the rehab center. The girl called and said, well, we need to have something for you to transport your husband. And I'm like, well, I have a van, you know, do whatever you need to do with it. Well, she called me back and she said, not going to work, so I'm going to buy you there. I'm like, okay. So she bought us this van, and this is just incredible. People now tell me, work with God did that for you? I'm like, no, God did that for me. It's gone. And so we got this van, and the ramp comes down, and you know, he just gets up. So he gets this new sleek chair, and every time I would push him out, I would just, you know, kind of push him out, and he'd roll down, and then he'd go in our house. And so he gets this new sleek chair, and I just let him go, and the chair goes, and he flies out. And I'm like, oh my gosh, are you hurt? And my husband looks at me and goes, yeah, I'm paralyzed. He's like, yeah, I can't move. He's laughing and he's sitting on the ground. So I'm screaming for my boys, help me, help me. Dad's on the ground. And they're laughing because I'm in distress, you know. And it's, you know, I have those bathtub incidents where I go in the bathtub and cry for like 4 hours with the water running. Okay, that was one of those days. My husband's like, really, honey, you didn't hurt me. Drained it, you know. But it was dramatic. I told him, you don't ever get to follow me, and that was it. That was your one time. So, he's had other incidences. Luckily, I wasn't there. My children were there. We were pouring concrete. My husband, still a construction guy, we were pouring concrete in our backyard. And my husband was in back there pouring concrete in his wheelchair. And he's backing up as the concrete thing is coming, and he backs up one of the things and flips over. And so I'm like, and I didn't know because I was at work. God spared me. My boys were like, Mom, Dad fell off the chair again. And he just flipped backwards. And I tell him, are you okay? He's like, I'm a little dirty, but I'm good. You know? got a great sense of humor. My husband, who he is, has changed who I am so dramatically. I have never once heard him say, God, why'd you do this? Why did you do this to me? Never. Or this is terrible. Or this is horrible. Or this is this. And so therefore, my perspective is, you know, this is our trial and we are not discounted. You are not discounted from fiery trials that change you and consume you. I guess I lived in the fairy tale world thinking, you know, my life is just going to be a grand old opera. I don't know. And God showed me his sovereign. We need to ask why. Why are you doing this? He has a plan. He has a perfect plan. And he knew. It took 25 years to prepare me for such a time as that. That I was going to be ready to take care of my husband who couldn't move. And so we have all the special equipment. We have a lift. And, I can tell you all these things that God has done that 5 years ago, what a lift is or how to fix the wheelchair or how to, any of these things. Any of these things. As a matter of fact, smells gross me out. And God has been covered me because I'm like, ew, really? I have to do that? And God said, you can do it. And so you'll be amazed, ladies, at what you can do when you have to do it. And so God has changed me. He's molded me. He's shaped me. And he's made me into this person that some days I look at and I go, really? Wow. Thanks, Lord. Because I had never known. I had never had compassion on somebody who is handicapped. I never parked in handicapped parking. I wasn't one of those people who would, I'll just park here. And it just infuriates me now that I have to park in handicapped parking, that people park there. I'm like, do they not know I'm going to live in that room? And this is really funny, because when you're in handicapped parking, and a car will park where the ladder is, there's like a little ladder, and I'm like, don't they know this is for the van? Don't they know this is for me that I have to knock this van out? Because the ramp has to come down. Mm-hmm. I had never thought about that in a million years. But it's really, really great when I take a person shopping the day after Thanksgiving. Score! I'm like, right in the front. So cool. I don't have those problems anymore. None of those trials, those parking trials. Except for at Costco, because every handicapped person shops there, I think. So, he worked hard every day, every day, every day. Well, here we go again. God's got another trial for us. In the meantime of him getting better and getting better, he developed a bone between his leg and his hip. So when he left rehab center in October of 2008, a bone began to grow. His body was trying to heal and heal and heal and heal and heal. So it grew a bone because he thought, it's called heterotrophic ossification. And what happens is your body overheals and it freaks out and thinks there's something, there was a trauma there. Well, my husband, because he had memory, I told him he had flipped the disc and he's wrong. They took a bone from his hip and put it into his neck. Well, his body decided that it was missing a bone. And so it grew one, a big one. That grew from here to here, which made his leg step like this. So he wasn't able to move. He stopped getting all his range. We would go take him to rehab, but his leg stopped moving, which meant he couldn't transfer. I had to use the lift for everything. And he was in pain, and it was painful and painful and painful. But you can't do anything about it until it grows to completion. And so from October 2008 to October 2010, this bone grew. And he was taking it, and thought, it'll stop growing, it'll stop growing. Not his. This kept growing. And so by the time we had to do another surgery, God had prepared us. And by this time, when we'd gotten home in October of 2008, it was 3 weeks and my husband was back on the pulpit. He said, I'm going to teach, and we went back to church, and he had lost all this weight, and for the accident, because your body just flips out and stuff. And he went to church, and he went in his chair, and he said, you know what? God's going to make me teach in this chair, then I'm going to have to be in this chair. And so he teaches 4 times a week. And he goes in his chair, and God did some amazing things. When we had started the church, like all little churches, we did everything. tweeted all the, I did the site school with, and did the, you know, every construction project. We did everything. And then here we are, the pastor's out, his wife is out, now what? And you know, Satan wanted that church shut down. We were the only church that was there and that was not going to move. And he wanted our church gone. He wanted to kill my husband, but God wouldn't let him. But he did want our church shut down. And up from these ashes comes this little family that had been serving in our church. Well, actually, they'd never served in our church. They'd been in our church for 2 years. They were bench sitters. And so they sat in the back, and they still came every for like 2 years. All of a sudden, God rose them up. And they took over, and they said, look, people, we got to start praying, and we got to start doing something. They're our assistant pastors now. But God raised them up, and they were, our church freaked out. They're like, who did all this stuff? And stuff like, our pastor and his wife did all of this stuff, and none of us did anything. So now we have to get up, and we have to do anything. So God changed our church, and in that time, he grew it, and he grew the people. And my husband did worship, and so now we had to have a new worship team, because he wasn't there to do the worship, and he couldn't play the guitar. That was the saddest thing, is that my husband could not play the guitar. And I bought him a guitar in the rehab center, and I gave it to him, but he couldn't move his fingers, and so he was so frustrated. And so, it was one of our prayers, Lord, please, you know, let him play again, let him worship you. And he got his arms back fully, I will tell you, that at 100%, and he can play, he plays worship at our church again. But I always tell him, you just need to be the pastor, let the worship team do it now. We're growing past that. So, but he does worship, and he plays the guitar all the time and stuff. And, you know, God is faithful. God is faithful. And so, back to the bone game. The doctor said, okay, we have to take this bone out. He, you know, he's lost all of his movement in his leg. You can't move him. He can't move. I mean, and he was in pain all the time. And so we said, okay, you know, so God again intervened. And they said, okay, who is the best bone surgeon in the United States? And people were like, really, workman's comp said that? Yeah, they want to find the best one. So in Tucson, Arizona, or actually Scottsdale, Arizona, there was a guy who worked with HO, ossifications and stuff. And so they told us, okay, tell you what, we're going to fly you out there and he's going to have surgery. So we thought, okay, Lord, you know. And by this time, we'd been back at the church for about, well, almost 2 years. And we said, okay, Lord, my husband doesn't like to ever miss church. For him to miss church is like, you know, something has to really be going on. So he said, I'm going to set out 3 weeks, Lord. So in 3 weeks, you have to take me through surgery, and you have to get me good, and I have to be home. Because that's all the time I'm giving the church. It's all the time I'm leaving. And so off we go again on another trip. And my poor little son, my 16-year-old son, he goes everywhere with us. He's 16, so he has to go. You know, he was 14 when his dad got hurt. He had to go to the rehab center. He had to stay through the whole thing. And he missed school, and, you know, he's had to make all that up. And there's just things that went on that was just incredible. But anyway, so him, Seth, and I packed up our stuff and packed up Dad, and we went to Scottsdale. My son Dylan was here at the Bible school. My daughter was, you know, he was like, oh, should we go? I'm like, yeah, you know, surgery, God's going to do it and stuff. Again, we were praying and praying. So we get to surgery, we get to Scottsdale, Arizona, and the doctor says, oh, no, I don't think we're going to do surgery now. And I'm like, really? He's like, well, we need to find out if there's cancer there or what's going on with that leg. And so they're going to do x-rays, and they're going to make sure everything is good. And so every day we're reading our word. Every day we're reading our word. God is encouraging us. So finally on the 22nd of October, I know the date because they decided to do surgery for my husband. And this is what the Lord, this is what God showed me in the morning, and this is what the Lord told my husband. Because he loves me, says the Lord, I will rescue him. I will protect him, for he acknowledges my name. He will call upon me, and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him, and with a long life will I satisfy him and show him my salvation. So I'm like, yes, Lord. So now we know that Frank's going to live long. But God told Frank he was going to live long anyways, but told him longer than me, he's going to live long. But God told us here again that he would live a really long life. And so we're really excited about that. And it was perfect because that was the day of surgery. So I promised before he even went into surgery. So they prepped him and they put him in surgery and everything was going good. The doctor, he came out and he said, everything went great. Everything's perfect. he had this big bone, we're going to give him a award for the biggest bone I've ever seen grow. And you know, I said, yeah, I said, no, we're cheaper. So we want it to be the best, and the biggest. And so they took the bone, and you can see it in 25 minutes. So I'm sitting in the waiting room, and my mom was there, because my mom, she's just so faithful. She goes with me wherever, too. So I'm sitting there, and we're praying, and we're just talking, and I'm like, 25 minutes, surgery went good, yay. 2 hours later, the doctor comes out, and his face is white. And he goes, there's a complication. And I said, okay. He lost a lot of blood. Remember I told you that he may lose a lot of blood? Well, he did. He almost died. Okay. So he woke up from his surgery. Thank goodness I wasn't in the room with him. He woke up from his surgery. They said, Frank, how are you doing? He said, I'm great. He said, who's the president? He said, unfortunately, Obama. And the doctor's like, yeah, yeah. Then he said, I don't feel good. And boom, down he went, and that was it. Every vein in his body collapsed. All his blood was, it just, I don't even know what happened, but they had to give him 2 transfusions right then and there. So now, he came out and he said, oh, but it's going to be okay, and you know, we've got it under control. I'm like, Lord, you told me this morning that he would live long life. Satan, you don't get to have him. This is my promise. This is the word you gave me today. This very day you gave me this word that he would live long. And so, in ICU, my husband goes. So he's in ICU. And we're like, okay, first off, we started the surgery. We have 3 weeks, Lord. And we started the surgery a week late. And now he's in ICU. And so he's in ICU, and there again, my husband's telling the nurse, turn that stuff off. I'm going to be fine. And so she's like, you know, Frank, we really can't turn things off until the doctor tells us. And he's like, God told me I was going to be good, and so turn it off. And she's like, yeah, you know. So little by little, they were turning down this medicine that was keeping his blood pressure up. Spinal cord injuries, their blood pressure runs about, sometimes his blood pressure is like 80 over 60. It's like really low. You could almost be dead, you know, for us normal people that are, you know, 120 over whatever. And anyways, he was sitting there and he was talking to us, and all of a sudden he goes, you know what, I don't feel so good. And boom, out he goes. And we're like, and the nurse is like, oh my God, call the doctors, you know, everybody call. And my husband's blood pressure dropped to 40 over 20, which is just, you know, so here again, we better give him blood transfusion. So they're transfusing his blood again. I'm like, oh, let that be clear blood. Please, you know, praying over him. And my husband went up and he's like, but the Lord said I was going to live a long time. So I'm fine. Okay. So, you know, I just want you to know that if you read your word, God can cover you. God can cover you. I had a promise. I had a promise back when he got hurt. And I had a promise on this day that he would live. And I don't care what Satan says or what it looked like. I claimed that promise over my husband every single day. And so he got better. And that night, boom, again. And the doctor's like, I still don't know what's going on. We're just going to keep transfusing him. So we ended up having 6 transfusions in that time he was in the ICU. But we claimed that promise and we prayed together. We said, Lord, you know what? You're going to do this. And the next day, my husband, everything was good. They said, we're going to move him to our regular room. I'm like, really? Wow. So we moved to the regular room. He was there 2 days and out. And God had did what he said he was going to do. We had to stay in Scottsdale because they wanted to make sure, you know, he didn't die again or that, you know, things didn't happen again. And so we stayed in Scottsdale for a couple of weeks. It was like a little mini vacation. It was really cool. It's all these shops. I was staying in this, like, 10-star hotel, and it was an athletic club. It was really cool. It was a whole house. I'm telling you, it was better than some houses that I've seen. It had a kitchen, a bedroom, a bathroom, a living room, a dinner, and a patio. So we could go in and out to see what we were. There again, covered us, and on work was gone. They're like, you have a place? Well, hey, where'd you last stay? So God gave us that. And so, you know, I just cannot tell you how faithful God was to us. My husband didn't die. He's still now preaching 4 days. His leg moves completely. so we were really excited. He is still considered a quadriplegic, only because his trunk can't move as well as it could. But let me tell you, I'm here today to tell you that on December 26th of this year, my husband and I were laying in bed and we were reading his word, and he moved his leg. And he said, I can move my leg. I'm like, You know, I said, I can move my leg. So I called the boys and I'm like, look, Dad can move his leg. And we were just all rejoicing because he could move his leg. And my husband said, see, I told you, God said, I will walk again. And we have clung to that promise and clung to that promise. He doesn't walk still. We still do therapy 2 times a week. But now his right leg moves. So it's like, he can do this little, you know. And he has his little bike and he gets on the bike. He can push the pedals. It was just for arms, just for his upper body, because he's really strong now. And he's got 100% here. So he can push his legs. And so here we go again, another journey in God's presence, another journey that's going to show the world that God is so faithful. And he has been faithful. And I'm here to attest to that, that God will deliver. And if you have his promise, you can cling to his promises. And I don't care how fiery that trial is, he will make beauty from those ashes. He will make beauty from the ashes that are left. And you know what? Sometimes God has to consume us, doesn't he? So that he can mold us and shape us into the image of his son. He needs to take those ashes. He needs to take them just like a potter and change. And make us a whole different person, so that he can use us and that we can grow what our faithful God has done. And so that's what I'm here to do, is to tell you that God is faithful. And no matter what it looks like in your life, you are the daughters of the King. And you have a hope that you will never, ever, he will never leave you. He will never forsake you. And you know what? Satan can do all these things. I saw Lisa come in here and say, let's do all these things. I'm like, is that all you got? Really? So I'm going. I'm getting on that plane. I'm going to go. And it doesn't matter, you know. And say, you know, he likes to do these little things. And I've become that woman where it's like, whatever. You know, we can get through this too. God will make beauty from the ashes. And he will change you. And he will mold you. And he will shape you. And he will be more Christ-like. And he will continue to do that. It's a continuous work. Till we reach the heavens, he's going to mold me and he's going to shape me. But you know what? The trials that you're going through now, even though they're small or they're big, he's got this perfect plan. And every trial you got and you go through, embrace it. Because it is changing you from the inside out. You are going to be this great woman of God. The rest of your lives, and you are going to affect the world around you. People are going to look at you. People at my work look at me and they go, really? How do you do this? And I'm like, by the grace of God, I have been able to share with people. And this one girl that it was your husband, I have all the people, because I work with a bunch of women. So glad it was your husband, because you're the only one that could probably get it, this whole business office. I'm like, oh, well, thanks, I think. Okay. But, you know, God is so good. And I've been able to use it. And I go to work every day. And you know what? My situation at home is my situation at home. But at work, I'm able to share what Jesus Christ has done. And how he has used my family. And is my husband 100% better now? No. Will he walk again? I believe that with all of my heart and soul and mind. Because God gave me a promise that he would stand. But guess what the best part is? He's going to save my city. That ugly, icky city. He's going to save them. And my husband will tell you, he will attest that if our city is saved, and it took this, and it's going to take this miracle of my husband getting up and, you know, walking for these people to come to the Lord, it's worth it all. It's worth it all. And do we have bad days? Of course we do. People have bad days. We all do. But you know what? The joy of the Lord is our strength. remember that the joy of the Lord is your strength. He will make beauty from the ashes that are left. Father, thank you for your amazing faithfulness to us. Lord, you are a God who loves us so much that you allow those fiery trials to break away and chip away, that you allow us to become that daughter that you want us so to be, that we can be a light to the world, this dying world around us. Father, I thank you. I thank you for the trials that we've come through. I thank you that you were there every single step of the way, and on the days that I couldn't do it, Lord, you carried us through. I thank you for my husband and that he has shown me through this accident that you are the only reason, and we are just pilgrims, and whether we're rolling through in a wheelchair or walking through, God, it's temporary. And so I pray over these ladies, I pray you would show them your amazing faithfulness, Lord. I pray that none of them go through this trial that I've had to go through, but I pray that the trials they go through would mold them and shape the image of yourself. And we all give them just want to give you glory today. And the sisters say, Amen. Amen.